Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, folks. I'm joined by Catherine Birbalsingh, the founder and headmistress of the Michaela School in Wembley, London. And this is a remarkable school because it is expressly founded on very conservative principles, shall we say, and sort of traditional levels of discipline, which a few years ago caused a bit of a stir in the media, didn't it?
Well, we're always causing a bit of a stir, I think, in the media ever since we tried to open. It took us 3.5 years to open, and we eventually opened in 2014.
Right.
And I got into lots of trouble because I spoke at the Conservative Party conference in 2010 and then was essentially kicked out of the profession because you're not allowed to side with the right when you're a teacher.
Or a conservative.
Yeah.
Okay, so would you like to just tell us a little bit about the school itself, just for anyone who doesn't know about it?
Yeah, so there's three things I'd say that really distinguish us. We have traditional discipline, traditional teaching, and traditional values. And we take all of that stuff very seriously. So people say I'm the strictest headmistress in Britain, which I'm quite happy to be known by that name. People sort of think strict means that you're mean. I would say that it means you love the children enough to keep your standards really high for them. And that discipline is what's needed in all of our schools. Traditional teaching, again, I think that's what's needed in all of our schools. And it used to be the case 60, 70 years ago, what I'm saying was perfectly normal 60 or 70 years ago. Nowadays, I'm a complete radical for expecting that children should do as they're told and do their homework and turn up on time. And that they don't all have some variety of need that needs to be met, because if they're not on time, it must be because of some unmet need, as opposed to, no, they just got up late, you know. There's the discipline, then there's the teaching. And the teaching, what do I mean by traditional teaching? You stand in front of the class, you lead the learning, you are the authority in the class. And that's a key word, authority, because we've lost our understanding of what it is to be an authority as adults who are meant to lead children. It shouldn't be the other way around. And to make sense of this to the ordinary listener, you go into a classroom, you'll often see desks that are grouped together and the children are facing this, that, and the other way and the teacher's over there, as opposed to the desks being in rows, facing the teacher, teacher's at the front, driving the bus, and all the children get on the bus and go with the teacher. That's what should be happening. That isn't the case. It's actually the children driving the bus, and obviously we're going in all the wrong directions as a result. And then there's the traditional values, which I think have all but disappeared in Britain. I mean, not just in our schools, but everywhere. So what are traditional values? I often call them small c conservative values. Values that I would say used to span both the right and the left politically. And for some reason, the left have completely abandoned all these values. So now they seem to be the home of the right. Things like personal responsibility. If I haven't done my homework, that's on me. It's not because my dog ate the homework, my brother stole my homework. It's me that's responsible. Things like a duty towards other people. So when you get a detention, you're not just letting yourself down, you're letting the whole class down, you're letting your form tutor down, you're letting your head of year down, and so on. You're letting your family down. Sacrifice. So you might sacrifice something that's important to you for the sake of the whole. That allows us all to be able to get on with each other. So part of that, very much, I would say, is our dedication to the country, patriotism. We have a British flag that flies outside the school. We sing God Save the King, Jerusalem, and I vow to thee my country. We learn Kipling's If, and so on. And, you know, once I had a Sunday Times journalist who came in and saw this happening, and he said, "Catherine, do you deliberately try and be controversial?" And I said, you know, there was always this deep shock at the idea of singing God Save the King or reciting Kipling, reciting any poetry for that matter. So we're just traditional in the way, teaching them gratitude, teaching them kindness. There's a sense of decency that used to be 60 or 70 years ago, I'd say, perfectly normal. Nowadays, it's considered to be quite controversial.
So, I mean, I've got four children, and that sounds like music to my ears.
Yeah.
And also, it sounds like what a right-wing educational program should look like. So I was really surprised to see you get so much pushback from the right.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that recently you did a debate with Connor Tomlinson on The Spectator that never got released.
Yeah.
Why do you think that was?
Well, first of all, I'd say that it wasn't really a debate. I'd say it was a conversation. I don't really like debates. I have participated in them in the past, and I don't like them because the idea is that you go to be able to stand your ground and argue with the other person. I didn't go to stand my ground with Connor. Connor had put out a couple of videos about the school, about Michaela, our school, and I thought he was incorrect in some of the things, the assumptions he was making. And I went along to have a conversation with him. So, you know, just like I've come along to have a conversation with you. I mean, in some ways, I think people might think that you and I are on opposite sides of the table. I don't actually know. I mean, you look surprised when I say that. I don't know. But I'm always willing to go and talk to people. So I thought, Connor's misunderstood our school. I want to talk to him. And so Michael Gove was kind enough to invite us on The Spectator. And we both went. And we all spoke in good faith. Connor and I had a conversation, which I think ended quite nicely, with me inviting him to the school and him inviting me to dinner. It was all very nice. I think he learned a lot about me, and I think I learned about him. And Michael Gove was also involved in that conversation. He wasn't just chairing. At one point, the two of them had got into it so much, I was going, hello, I'm over here, kind of thing. So, so it came as a surprise when The Spectator did not want to publish. Now, Connor was very angry about this.
Just a quick aside. Michael Gove is the editor of The Spectator. So when we say The Spectator didn't want to publish, we say Michael Gove didn't want to publish.
Well, I don't know. I don't think so. And, you know, I've since seen Connor. And Connor said to me that he doesn't actually, he used to think it was Michael Gove, and he doesn't think it's Michael Gove anymore. And he thinks it's people above, you know, Gove.
Oh, right, okay.
So, and I think that's probably right, just because Michael Gove on the evening when we were talking was so keen. You know, Connor kept saying, are you going to publish? Are you going to publish? And he was very suspicious of them not publishing it. And Michael Gove kept saying, yes, definitely. So I just, why would he have invited us on? It wouldn't make any sense.
I agree.
And I also think that the conversation was quite a nice conversation. I don't really understand why, but you know, the thing is, as far as I'm concerned, The Spectator have the right not to publish whatever they don't, you know, they're a private organization, they can do what they like. I've been on the media many times. I have been stood down for so many things. Things have been recorded before and they don't publish for whatever reason. And I sort of just shrug my shoulders and continue. But yes, what was interesting was what Connor was saying about us. And I do think he was just wrong. So
well, what was his contention?
What was he saying? Yeah. So, and it's not just him. There are lots of people on the right who these days do come out after me, which is interesting because I'd say 5-6 years ago, it was only the left that was attacking me. Now I get attacked by both. For instance, there is a lovely photo of Roger Scruton when he came to visit our school. I had him come and talk to the children about fox hunting because I thought, well, inner city kids, they don't know much about fox hunting. He's this great lover of fox hunting. You know, this will be great. And it was lovely.
That is controversial, just in case anyone's wondering.
What,
to just be a fox hunting advocate?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And well, that was Roger Scruton, and he gave me his lovely book on fox hunting, which of course is all the more precious to me now that he has passed on. And we had a wonderful time with him, and we took a photo. And at some point at that time, I put it on Twitter, X now, and as I've always done, I put photos of the kids up all the time saying, look at us going to, you know, the football, look at us doing this, that, and the other. And that photo every now and again rears its head by someone saying, look at this teacher. So they don't recognize him as Roger Scruton. Look at this teacher with all of these immigrant kids. I'm being quite nice in the way that I say that. They say other things that are not so nice. Yeah. And they're very rude about my children. And they're very rude about Roger Scruton, for that matter. And so that's one way, just the kind of, just naked kind of racism where they really come after us for just being kids in a photo with this white teacher who is Roger Scruton. And then Connor, who wasn't doing that sort of thing, but what Connor was saying was, he was making various assumptions. So he was saying that the reason why we have to be so strict at Michaela is because we have this mixed intake. And, you know, I have to say, there are very few white children at Michaela. Most of them are brown or black from a wide variety of backgrounds, Middle Eastern, Indian, Caribbean, African. You know, they come from a wide variety.
So of I looked up some stats and apparently it's 98.8%.
Right. Okay. Well, I didn't know that, but yes,
I'm not trying to.
No, no, it is mainly. And why is that the case? Because in Brent, where we are, those are the children. And it has to be said that the white middle classes who might live nearby choose not to send their children to Michaela. And that's because the white middle classes don't like what we offer. You know, they don't like the strict discipline. They don't want, you know, they're more the sort of guardian reading types who would never in a million years choose a school like ours. So, I mean, I get all sorts of people on the right accusing me of having murdered all the white children. I mean, it's completely ridiculous. I mean, yeah, so
nonsense.
So, yes, yes. So there's that. Connor, of course, is not one of those people. But Connor was making the assumption that the reason why we have strict discipline is because we have to, because of the intake. And at one point we got into a bit of a ding dong where I was saying, but have you ever seen a white majority school? Because if you went into a white majority school, you would find terrible behavior, just like you find terrible behavior in all the schools, whatever their intakes, you know. Then the attack on me was, you just hate white children.
Well, hang on, hang on. I'd like to pause on that bit, because one of the things that I think that Connor and people of his generation don't understand is, if you were to go back 50 years or so, the regime that you're running at the school was normal. Right, it was completely normal for all the white kids in Britain.
Yes,
they were all meant to be schooled in this way, and so you're not actually doing anything specifically because they are minority or ethnic minority children. It's that the standards and the nature of education in this country has changed so dramatically.
That's right, and so I think you speak to part of the heart of the problem, where ethno-nationalists, when they're saying, well, actually, and I'd be interested in your view on this, that all we need to do is get rid of the immigrants. If we get rid of the immigrants, then England will be wonderful. And I sort of think, but do you know that it's more complicated than that? I mean, I understand the worry that some of the ethno-nationalists have with too much immigration. I am not pro-mass immigration. I understand that the immigration that's been happening since 1997 is massively problematic, and that the numbers that came from 1948 to 1997 are the same that's come in the last however few years.
Since the Norman Conquest, yeah.
Yes, or what, you know, whatever the various stats are, it is absolutely the case that there's far too much immigration and that something needs to be done about that. But I do think that this idea that we're just going to, we'll make it all better, we'll just put everybody on a helicopter. So that's the other thing, is that there are some of the people on X who tell me I should need to be on a helicopter and they want to send me home. I think it's a bit of a fantasy world. You know, so I saw you commenting on Steve Laws and his opinions on these things. And you were saying it's a bit of a, he's just living in a bit of a fantasy. And I mean, it's all well and good. I mean, we like to watch Disney and we like to watch, you know, all sorts of, we read fantasy books, we enjoy them. But I think we all need to be a bit grown up about this. And we need to think, well, actually, how can we all get on with each other? Yes, there needs to be a national conversation about immigration. Yes, there needs to be a conversation about the mass immigration that's going on. That's a problem. But we also need a conversation about how can we all get on. And so our school, where Connor was wrong, is that discipline is discipline that I would put in any school. If I was running a school with majority white kids, it would be exactly the same. And guess what? It would be a very successful school, just like my current school is. And we get 1,000 guests every year. And all of your listeners are welcome to come and visit us. You just go on the website, you sign up, anybody can come and see it. And the reason why we've always done that is because I'm trying to show people what is possible in education. I go around to education conferences all the time, talking about our methods deliberately so that other schools can copy us. And some schools have, lots of teachers have. I get letters from all sorts of people everywhere saying, oh my goodness, this works so well, thank you so much. And and they take those methods and they use them in their own classrooms and they change their classrooms for the better. So this has nothing to do, those methods that I've just spoken to you about has nothing to do with the intake that we have. Having said that, where there is some truth is that I do think that in a country that it has a variety of people from different places, you do have to make a bit more of an effort to make sure that we can all get on with each other. And either we do that or we say, no, let's just hire a whole bunch of helicopters and send them home. But then you have to think, well, who are you sending home exactly? Are you sending home people with British passports? So Britain isn't their home. If they've lived here for 30 years, is it not their home? If all their ties are to England and they're born here and their children are here and they've brought up their whole families here, are we saying that they're not, you know, they're not British because their parents weren't British or their parents before that aren't British? Is that what we're saying? Are we going to just raise all the mosques to the ground and all the temples to the ground? Are we just going to ban any religion apart from Christianity? I mean, look, you know.
There are going to be people who say yes to
right.
all of that.
Okay, but, fine. But is that really going to happen? It isn't going to happen.
No.
So I don't think there's any point in us talking about that as an option. What we should be talking about is a positive vision for how we can create a country where we don't get white people hating themselves, where white guilt is the name of the game, and where black, brown, and white people can all get on with each other. And the problem with the left is that they like to pretend that that's all fine. And that's because they live in Hampstead, and they've got one black friend who went to Eton, and that's all lovely. And, you know, that's fine. You know, good luck to them. But the fact is, I recognize that it's a lot more complex than that. And so we are very good at Michaela at ensuring that our diverse population has a love for Britain, has a real knowledge of British history and what Britain is and what it is to be British. And the fact of the matter is that the vast majority of schools don't do that. They just don't do that. And so when Connor is saying, oh, Michaela is the problem, I'm thinking to myself, we're the one school in Britain that's actually teaching British history properly. We're the one school in Britain that has the kids singing God Save the King, Jerusalem, I've added thee my country every week. We're the one school in Britain that flies one flag, which is the Union flag outside. We're the only school, right? So this idea that it actually teaches chronological British history properly, where they know it inside out. And if you come and talk to my kids about British history, they will have a showdown with anybody out there and win it. I tell you, they will. And that there's a real sense of we are British together, and that unifies us, and they understand that. Now, the idea that you all should be attacking us, it's just ridiculous. Because what if, as far as I'm concerned, the ethno-nationalists should be saying, why is there no Michaela in Blackpool? Why is there no Michaela in Hull? We want this for our white kids, as you just said, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But they're not saying that, which sort of makes you think, well, why? Why are they not saying
that? I can
that?
Tell you. So I feel like you've had to get this off your chest. So that was...
Yes.
But normally you have to coax these things out of people. So I think the problem is that people of Connor's age, they don't understand what English, in particular, schools used to be like. And actually what...
And are right now.
And are right now. I mean, I take it you watched Adolescence.
Yes.
My God. Ignore the plot. Look at the school.
Well, I can tell you it's worse than that.
I've got four kids.
I was thinking, everybody's shocked by the behavior in adolescence. I'm watching it thinking these kids are actually behaving really well.
Yeah, right? Compared to a lot of state schools.
Loads of them.
Yeah.
And, loads.
And this is all a part of the sort of loosening of bonds and the breaking down of barriers and the reduction of order to complete chaos. And so the teachers, as you say, have no authority. And one thing that I thought people didn't take away from adolescence is just look at the dilapidated state of the country. Like, that's an accurate representation of this country right now. And everyone's focused on the narrative, but it's like, no, look at what they're in. I mean, the police officer hates the school when he goes to the school, you know? And so that was a great representation of what is essentially the problem. It's the loosening of all of these borders and barriers that were actually good for the children, right? And so I actually was very surprised when Connor misinterpreted what I think you are doing at Michaela, because I view you as basically doing what you can with what you have, right? I mean, you're not in charge of the immigration policy.
No.
You're not in charge of the demographics of Brent or anywhere in London or anywhere in the country. And so in this situation, what is the best option? And I do agree that the Michaela School is the best option in this situation. And I think a lot of people are just... I think a lot of people feel very insecure with the way that the country is and the future of the country. And I think they're right to feel this way. And I think that from this insecurity, they lash out at whoever
that's appears right
to be in a position of authority, even if it's just the headmistress of school.
Yes.
You know,
Like, no, that's right.
They act as if you're in charge of the Home Office.
That's right. Well, they're angry. And that's what the left doesn't understand, because with all their insanity that they're doing, they're creating a massive problem with a whole bunch of people who are very resentful, which I understand. Yeah. I get that resentment. I get it. And I get the sense of insecurity. And they're looking at their country and they're thinking, well, wait a minute. Even 25 years ago, it didn't look like this. And so what on earth is going on? And we keep voting in different people, hoping that they're going to fix things. And actually, they just make things worse and worse. So I get that. But it's not just the politicians. So what I would say that I think everyone is missing is what is going on in our schools and what is going on in our homes and how we have lost control of the idea of being the authority. And I think, so this is where I have real disagreements with the ethno-nationalists. They just look at the ethnic minorities and they say, oh, it's all your fault. You know, it's because you're here. That's just too simple an explanation. I get mass migration is a problem. But things were not like this in 1985. It wasn't like this. And in 1985, there were immigrants here. So there were immigrants and there was...
Just to be clear, you're completely correct that the social liberalization of Britain has happened... Probably within my lifetime. I remember when I was quite young having much more strict teachers than I had when I left school. It was a process of social liberalization that I personally have lived through.
Yes.
And I don't think it was for the better. Because I always advise people, look, read something from 100 years ago, and you realize that the grammar, the syntax, the nature of the thoughts that the people are putting to paper are more complex, they're richer, and they're more sensitive in many ways.
Yes.
It's because of the strict environment that they grew up in. Where they had to pay attention, not just to themselves, but to the group as a whole, the community as a whole.
Exactly.
And take personal responsibility for the quality of the community.
Exactly.
And so this all is very apparent to me, that it has been this general loosening of society. And
that loosening of society hasn't happened because of immigration.
No, not at all.
In fact, those immigrants from Nigeria and Jamaica, they came here with very strict ways of being.
Yes.
They would go into schools and think, oh my goodness, actually things are very loose here in comparison to what we knew at home.
Yeah, but they didn't used to be. This sort of loosening, the strict standards in the schools were a product of the British Empire, which was obviously a product of Britain and England.
Yes,
they
indeed.
Were our standards.
Exactly, you're right.
They're not alien to us.
Yes.
And so this is why I've invited you here, one of the reasons, because I was a bit frustrated with Connor's position on it. It was like, no, Connor... This is how you should have been raised, right?
Exactly.
You know, even if you were in, I don't know whereabouts he went to school, but like even if it was, you know, somewhere in the Northeast or something, whether you're in Cornwall or something, where every child is white and has 1,000 years of indigenous ancestry.
Exactly.
That's how we thought that had to be done. And so it's wrong that we don't raise our own children this way. And I tell you, as dad of four kids, I want discipline. I want
indeed. I think of my own father when I showed him our book list for the books that the children were going to read and what we were going to study. And he looked at it and he said, oh, this really reminds me of my British school in British Guyana.
Oh,
you know,
good, yeah.
This is similar to that, which of course, all the other schools, you know, around, they're not teaching this. Yeah. They're teaching a curriculum that if people really delved into, they would be horrified by what our schools are teaching. And that's what's important, is that we don't realize that schools are the silent engines in the background changing the country. And people are totally distracted by the immigration question, which of course I understand why. But you've also got to ask yourselves the questions, but why are our politicians doing this? Why are our media class behaving as they are? Why are the journalists writing as they are? Because they were all educated in our schools. That's why they got these ideas from somewhere. Why do white people in Britain feel so guilty that they're behaving in ways that are completely inexplicable, right? Because of our schools. Our schools have taught them to be a certain way. And it's not just the schools. The media is teaching them to be that way. Our general culture is teaching them to be that way.
But again, all those people are the product of the schools. I mean, the irony is the communists fully understood this. There's a French communist called Louis Althusser who described what you're talking about as ideological state apparatus.
Right.
So the schools, the churches, and any other big public institution that basically everyone goes through is what he calls an ideological state apparatus. And what this does is essentially kind of formats the people into a particular kind of worldview that they carry with them forever as they go into the world. And so they were, as a communist, he was like, well, we have to be in these and we have to be changing things. And now if you look at it, 3/4 of teachers vote Labour.
Yes.
So indeed. I think mission accomplished by the communists. And what is very frustrating is the right doesn't understand this point in particular, that if you aren't producing people who you could call conservatives, as in people who have not just a patriotism, but a proper and comprehensive understanding of the history and the cultural boundaries that made you what you are and not something else.
Exactly.
Then you can't, you don't have an ideological state apparatus that is producing those people to become the civilization of the future. And so it is literally like putting it through, I don't know, a prism or something, right? You're putting the culture into the prism and it comes out in a different way.
Exactly.
And you're like, okay, but I wanted the previous thing. Why aren't I getting it? Oh, it must be something on the other side. And it's like, no, it's because it's going through the prism.
Exactly.
And you don't control the education.
Exactly.
Like, conservatives just do not go into education. And it's like, no, this, if you think about British schools 100 years ago, they're the most conservative things you can think
of.
Exactly. And I, like I said, I remember when I was about, 10, 12 years old, having really conservative schoolmasters, but now it's liberal women controlling schools. And it's like, okay, but we've let that go. We've dropped that ball. And what kind of output do you think liberal women are going to produce when it comes to the education of future generations?
Well, it's also liberal men, I mean, I have to say.
But it's mostly women, isn't it? It's something like 2/3 women.
In terms of teachers, but there's, in terms of who's running our primary schools, for instance, they're mainly men.
Sure, sure. The teachers themselves, and they deal with on a daily basis. And
no, that's true. But it will be the leaders of the school who will set the culture of the place.
That's also true.
And the fact is, I would say it's a combination of very liberal. I mean, liberal is, some very leftist people who are running our schools and who are teaching in our schools. And it's not just that they feel that in order to be a good teacher, you really need to radicalize the children and make them into these radicals who are going to overthrow the establishment. And that, I sort of think our job is to teach maths and English and
see the communist,
and science.
You can see the communist influence there, right? Because that's a communist opinion.
Yeah.
Even a liberal would say, well, no, we live in a liberal democracy, so we don't want... You're not a revolutionary in a liberal democracy if you're a liberal. Only the communists. And this comes from a long line of communist ideological thinking that, oh, we have to weaken the substructure of society in order to be able to bring about finally a communist country. I mean, this is a very well documented series of communist intellectuals who have come to these conclusions. And here we are, where this is the normal view in British schools.
Yes, although I wouldn't. It's not like anyone is sat there going, "Ha ha! How do we turn them into communists?" I think the teachers think they're doing the right thing, and they think they're making the children into better people by teaching them about white privilege,
LGBT,
or having the different groups. That's it. You're the LGBT group. You're the Muslim group. You're the Hindu group. Everyone has their victim status. You have children from different backgrounds, and let's all bring our flags in and celebrate where we're actually from. And I sort of think, well, that's it. And don't teach them any British history. And if you do, it's always about how Britain was really bad. And so all anybody's ever hearing is Britain's a terrible country. All these other countries are good. Of course, all the children are going to grow up disliking Britain, feeling uncomfortable with it. And then everybody turns around and says, why is this going on in our country? Why is the media talking the way that it is? Why do we have these problems? And I think, well, it's just obvious. The schools have made it that way. Yeah. And I know, people will now attack me for being just quite honest about what is going on in our schools. People just, they don't realize. And I also think, I meet people all the time in their 50s and 60s who have children who are perhaps 15, 20, 25 years old. And they'll often say to me, my children are a bit estranged in a way. I try and say something about how I find it odd that drag queens are reading to toddlers, and they call me a Nazi. Or I look at it and I think, oh, it's a bit odd that we have so much immigration. And they say to me that, I hate black people. And I think, but that's not true. And I find it difficult to speak to my children. And they never understand why. And when I say to them, when they say to me, well, what's going on? And I say, well, it's obvious to me. And they say, well, what's going on? And I say, well, you sent them to school. And then what they say is, no, but I sent him to a really good private school. We saved up our money and we sent him to this excellent private school. And I say, well, all the more so then. That's why your child feels the way that they do. And the kind of the indoctrination is so deep that, you know, often these sorts of people will say, well, I was a Marxist when I was at university, so they'll get over it. I don't think they're going to get over it. I think this is wedded to their identity, that they believe in order to be a good person, they have to think in this way, because the identitarians have taken over our country. They we can only see everything through this grievance identity politics lens. Everybody's competing for who's got the biggest victim card. They've been brought up with that from such a young age that that's how they see everything.
Can I just pause you on that, because this is an issue that I that has actually there are numbers in on this. Younger generations are, like, millennials are not growing more conservative as they get older,
right?
And I think that the sort of Gen X and boomers don't understand why that is, because the boomers in particular had a very conservative generation that raised them. And a lot of their culture is, you can see in effect, essentially rebelling against the conservative nature of particularly Britain, but also American culture. And Gen Xers, which were that cohort, we still lived in the shadow of a conservative culture, as in the schools were relatively conservative.
Yes.
The culture itself was still relatively conservative, actually.
Yes.
It was
and Christian.
And Christian. And it was not nearly as licentious as things are now. But if you think about it from the millennial perspective, you don't remember the conservative culture. So the boomers and the Gen Xers, when you've gone through the education system and you've realized, oh no, all of this communist nonsense is nonsense, doesn't work, you at least have a framework to fall back on.
That's right.
Right, okay, well, I can... But if you've never really grown up in a conservative culture, if you don't have that framework embedded in you, even if you're rebelling against it, and it's come back to the realization that this was correct, well, then you can only double down on your progressive views.
Yes.
And I think that's what we're seeing now.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I think our generation, you know, we just took for granted, you know, you could play around with things and you could rebel. And we took for granted the Christian roots of the country, the natural conservatism that was there. And we all just sort of did what we wanted and we were all free. It's all about freedom and liberalism, which I understand you have rejected liberalism.
I have
now.
Entirely, yeah.
Which is good to hear. Yeah. That sense of freedom before collective duty has really destroyed our souls. And that has nothing to do with immigration. That has to do, I think, really... moving away from the Second World War, you hate totalitarianism. How do you stop it? Well, totalitarianism is bad because you've got the collective who then oppress, you know. So we all have to be individuals who are free, who can do what we like. And you do you, and you live your best life, as opposed to, no, I've got duties to people. I've got responsibilities. Actually, I've got to sacrifice sometimes things that are important to me. And I'd love to just be able to hang out with my mates all the time. But I'm going to be a duty. I'm going to think of my duties as a father, as a husband, as someone who has to go out to work every day and earn a living and support my family, because that's what's right and proper, you know.
Yeah.
We've lost all of that. And the thing is that the things that I'm saying really ought to be music to any conservative, anyone who would consider themselves conservative. And to a liberal, obviously they won't like it. And so in terms of your listeners, I mean, I sort of think it's irrelevant who I'm teaching. I mean, we've got the kids in Brent who we're teaching. And isn't it better that all of us should feel as if we're British? I mean, because we're not getting on a helicopter. I mean, we're not going anywhere.
Let me pause you there again. I think that's the crux of the issue, isn't it? In the circumstances in which you find yourselves, yes, it is obviously better to have this very traditional interpretation of education imposed, honestly, quite unflinchingly, on whoever comes to the country, regardless of who they are or where they've come from. And that is the only way integration could happen. Because otherwise, I think we can agree what we see now is essentially ethnic enclaves.
Yeah.
What you could fairly describe as colonies. I mean,
yes.
I grew up on a colony, in a British colony in Germany for about 8 years.
Right.
And I don't speak any German.
Right.
I don't speak any... I went into the German countryside and to German towns and cities all the time. Like, every weekend, I'd get on a bus or get on a train, go to a German city. And yet, I didn't need to ever learn any German. And you get this, like, a friend of mine called Ed Dutton went to Manchester the other day, and he found people who've British citizens, been here God knows how many decades, don't speak any English because they don't need to in their own communities. Yes. It's exactly the same issue. So if you were going to have, I mean, we have immigrants whether we like it or not, right? So
exactly.
You know, unfortunately, you know, you're a headmistress and I'm a podcaster, so we're not in charge of that. But what would be the best thing to do in your position? Well, it would be to impose actually a very pro-British, strict, old English-style education on the newcomers and say, no, this is how these things are done in this country. They're done this way for a reason. There are all these benefits that come from it. And actually, it's irresponsible of us to not do this.
Yes.
So in the circumstances, I think you are genuinely doing the best that can be done.
And had Britain done this
from the start,
from 1975... or 1965, you know, had Britain done this, and that's the point, really. The problem is, yes, mass migration is a problem. I get that, fine.
Yeah.
But aside from that,
we've agreed on,
you know,
that. That's
yes,
fine.
We get that.
Talk about something else.
There are immigrants to the country. Therefore, what should we all be doing? The point is, what do we believe in as a country? Where is the strength to the country? If all the country is doing is constantly apologizing for itself, if all white people are doing, I'm constantly thinking, what is wrong with white people? The next, you know, they want to bring immigrants, put immigrants into the countryside. We must make it more diverse.
Yeah,
I mean,
so
what is, I'm constantly looking and thinking, what is wrong with white people? Maybe you can tell me, Carl. I'm totally baffled by all of it. And the thing is that some of those white people then say it's the fault of the immigrants. And I'm always thinking, do you not see who's in the main making these decisions? It tends to be white people, you know? And then we need to look at the differences. And this is where, you know, it's all very well and good saying, okay, people from different diverse backgrounds, it's more difficult for them to get along. I agree. But it's also the case that atheists and Christians might have difficulty getting along. It's also the case that Protestants and Catholics might have difficulty getting along.
Well, historically have.
Indeed. It's also the case that Keir Starmer is a white English man, right? Doing things that, I mean, ultimately, I sort of want to ask you, who would you prefer running the country? Keir Starmer and Jess Phillips or Zia Yusuf and Suella Braverman? Who would you prefer?
If I had my choice between the two, I would obviously go Zia Yusuf and Suella Braverman because,
right,
of course, they're going to create an order that would be much more amenable to what I think should be the case. But I think it's worth taking a step back here because it is, I'm trying to think of a way of putting this that isn't inflammatory.
Go on. I look forward to it.
It shouldn't be that there are any schools that are 98% ethnic.
I understand that. And I agree with you.
And my choice shouldn't be two English people or two foreigners and I should, you know, non-English people. And I shouldn't, in an ideal world, I shouldn't want to prefer the non-English people to be in charge because they would be politically better. I appreciate that's where we are.
And then you need to ask, so what's going on? So we've already discussed the schools and we've discussed the culture. So the point is, it's a lot more complicated than just talking about immigration.
Well, it's been a long process of self-abnegation where the white British population essentially lost complete confidence in itself.
And then asked why. So we've lost our conservatism, we talked about Christianity, and we haven't talked enough about Christianity.
It's
because the loss of Christianity in this country, the church bells used to ring.
I agree.
They're not ringing anymore.
I agree. but there's also, it's not just a loss of Christianity. It's a loss of self-confidence in being able to build a constructive order. Being able to put up boundaries and say, no, this is right and the other's wrong.
But why did we have that confidence before? So our generation, you see, we were able to move away from, and look, I'm not a Christian just for the record, you know, but the fact is that our generation were able to play with liberalism and we were able to become liberals and think, oh, freedom, that's what matters, right? But we had the grounding of Christianity there. And so the sorts of values that I've just described to you that we have in our secular school are historically Christian values. I mean, that's what they are.
But just I don't think Christianity is a panacea on this either, because there are interpretations of Christianity that definitely can go very left-wing in their universality.
Yes, but that would
turn the other cheek nature, right?
But that's post. I would say that that's post-Christianity.
Well,
that's not actual Christianity.
That's the thing. That's a debate that Christians can have. I don't think it's just a panacea, though. I think the main issue is a kind of liberal racial guilt that white people feel they're following.
Yes.
Because honestly, and again, I don't really know how to put this.
Go on, I don't mind. You won't offend me. I can take it.
It's not about you.
Oh, right.
It's... We are so intransigently liberal that we can't accept the supremacy of the British system.
Right? Yeah.
The British educational system was superior to other educational systems.
Yeah.
And therefore, the people who built that system must have had something, not necessarily genetically, but something about their historically contingent circumstances mm-hmm. that was more advantageous than other people's, right? So whether that's the place, whether that's the events that made the country what it is, and I'm not ruling out, you know, biological explanations either. I'm not advocating those, I'm not advancing them. But the point is, we refuse to believe that we could be better than other people, right? That's the problem. Whereas I think it's demonstrable just from the desirability of Western countries, in particular yes. English-speaking countries. The system that we have is clearly better than the alternative. You know, it used to produce the most incredible people in the world, mm-hmm. and they created the world's largest empire. And they had, and if it was just like a Mongol case of, yeah, okay, we went over and sacked loads of cities, then fine, you could agree that that wouldn't be very advantageous. But evidently, we created prosperity as well. We created the height of intellectualism. We created education, you know, industry, you know, roads, rails, all this sort of thing. So it's not just that the system was more powerful. Mm-hmm. It's that it was generatively better for everyone, I think.
Well, I mean, that is a discussion that people can have. But, is it, I mean, you know, this is always my feeling that, you know, countries ought to have agency. So I'm certainly not advocating for colonialism. But I can understand what you're saying.
Let me just make sure I'm very clear here, though. I'm not advocating for any kind of, you know, racial supremacism or anything like that. But there has to be a kind of national self-confidence. And the British national self-confidence came from essentially thinking of themselves as being better than everyone else. And
do you have to think that you're better? I mean, I don't know if it's so much better, but just
I'm not saying
this is our country. We believe. So I always think of it like my school.
Yeah.
This is our school. These are our values. This is our ethos. As you'll know, we ended up in.
Surely you hold to those because you think they're better than the alternatives.
Well, yes. I mean, we've chosen that ethos because we think it's better,
I
suppose.
The
main thing is that it's our ethos.
Yes.
I'm not going to allow one child to say, well, I know we've signed up for a school that doesn't have prayer, but we're going to insist that we have prayer and I'm taking you to court for it. I'll fight you all the way. And did, right? Because that's not right. It's not right for one child to undermine everything that we have worked for a decade and a half to build up our school and establish it with a very clear ethos, and for that ethos to be completely undermined because she doesn't like it, you know? And that sort of respect and deference, I would say, used to be very much the case when I think about my own parents and when they came to Britain in the 60s. You know, my Caribbean parents.
Just to really hammer on this point, that I think that we are reluctant to admit the influence that cultural chauvinism has in the life and death of nations. So I think it's normal mm-hmm. for at least European nations to have this kind of particularity and self-preferencing that is not necessarily a narrative that is strictly accurate, but serves as a kind of binding agent and propellant for upward motion in the culture itself. For example, the competition between Britain and France, like there's not really any point trying to say who's better, but every Brit and every Frenchman has an answer as to which one's better. Do you see what I'm saying?
Sure. So obviously I agree with having a sort of sense of pride in your nation, but I don't think the conversation that we're having needs to rest on the idea of, oh, we're better than everybody else. It's just simply We believe in who we are and we know who we are.
I agree.
The problem with Britain right now is we literally don't know who we are.
I agree.
We don't know what we believe, apart from our culture is to celebrate everybody else's culture, but we don't actually have a culture of our own. There's something wrong with that.
But the reason that we're so celebratory of other cultures is because we intrinsically, at least the white British elite, intrinsically have a sense of guilt. And Orwell spoke about this at
length. Yes.
And I think that comes from their fundamental commitment to the moral principle of equality.
Yes, I agree.
In the face of the supremacy of the British Empire. It's just not a tenable prospect to say, oh, we're all equal, actually, if British people rule the world. Say what you like.
That's what you mean, yes.
But there is an, you know, you can profess anything you want.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, it's still the Brits who are running the world and everyone's speaking English.
Yes.
So it's one of those, so the reason that I think we're so self-destructive when it comes to our own culture is a legacy of empire in which essentially we were trying to prove that actually we are all equal. And so, you know, we'll bring in as many people as we can and we'll give them all their cultural trappings and allow them to do whatever it is they want. And we will, in fact, destroy ourselves in order to create this kind of equality. And now we're 50 years out from decolonization. And we're looking around and saying, okay, well, are we equal yet? And, well, in some ways, yes. In other ways, no. But I think that the fear of feeling ourselves to be a powerful group in the world and the knowledge that what can be done when British people actually are self-confident is the opposite of equality, right? It's we'll end up.
Possibly. I mean,
well, we did historically. We ended
up
conquering.
Yes, and there is a guilt around that somehow as white people, you inherit this guilt for what ancestors may or may not have done.
It's not guilt, because the average Brit certainly doesn't feel guilty of the empire. They think the empire was a good thing, and the polling is still very consistent on.
Yes, but actually, some of the people in positions of power, feel like that.
But the reason they feel guilty is because they hold morally to a liberal doctrine of equality.
Yes, I agree.
Mm. And that comes from Christianity. That's an inheritance of Christianity.
Yes, but that's the point. No. That is post-Christianity, because Christianity says we are equal in the eyes of God. That is not the same as being equal, right?
In the real world.
And so we think, because we don't have God anymore, we lost God, so we can't be equal in the eyes of God anymore. Instead, we're just equal. That means we're all the same. Yes. Men and women are the same and are interchangeable. Yes. Everyone's just the same. It's totally ridiculous. I mean, so that's why I say it's post-Christianity. If we were thinking like Christians, then we would understand that what Christianity meant when it talks about equality, when you're equal in the eyes of God, that means that you're morally equal, that we all suffer from original sin. That's what Christianity is saying. And we all suffer from original sin, meaning we're all flawed. It's much easier to sit on the sofa and watch television than it is to go to the gym.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's much easier to eat the brownie. I ate some shortcake on the train on the way over here, and I was thinking, and a hot chocolate, which is just terrible. I should have done it, but I did. And because it's so much easier, because we all suffer from original sin. And I know that about children, right? I know that if you put two toddlers in a room with a toy, they're going to bash each other, right? And unless you teach them how to be good and how to share, they'll never learn how to do it. Now, unfortunately, a whole bunch of people on the left believe in original virtue instead of original sin. And so they, no matter all the evidence of all the toddlers and all the children in the world, doesn't matter. They are absolutely convinced that children are just born wonderful and lovely. And all we need to do is all sit together in a classroom. And if anybody misbehaves, it's because they have an unmet need. That's what they say. And then what we need to do is meet the needs of all the neurodiverse children and all the different ethnic children and all the different, you know, there's so many different children I can possibly keep track. When actually, children are children. Doesn't matter what race, what religion, what neurodiversity. It doesn't matter. Children are children. They're all naughty. And all you need to do is praise them and punish them. And guess what? It works. A traditional way of merits and demerits. You do something good, you got a merit. Yep. Do something bad, you get a demerit. And guess what? All the children behave. I mean, that's what happens when you're consistent and you're conservative in the way in which you deliver these things.
I mean, just to go just down that rabbit hole a second. I think the The idea of freedom is the worst thing to be applied to a child. We have got this absurd perspective that children need to be able to explore. No. Children need boundaries and reliability. They need to know that yesterday will be like today and today will be like tomorrow. And
exactly.
They need to know exactly where the boundaries are if they're going to be happy, healthy and wholesome, right? So on that, we completely agree.
That consists, today will be like tomorrow, you know?
Exactly.
Tomorrow will be like today. The fact is that they need that consistency from classroom to classroom. They need it from the family
and
to everyone, school.
Yeah, their entire life.
It's their whole lives. And they just know. And that way, over time, you build habits. That's what one should be doing. That as adults, we hold on to that authority. And unfortunately, we have confused authority, being in authority, with authoritarianism. So we all think we don't want to be like Hitler. Hitler was in authority. No, actually, he was an authoritarian. Parents, mums and dads are just in authority. And it's our job not to be friends with our children. It's our job.
That's another point that I hate so much. Sorry to interrupt.
No.
I remember when I was about 21, 22, and I was at university, I think it was. And I remember my dad, for the first time ever, called me mate. I was like, no, Dad, I'm your son.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand the significance of it, but it just drove me crazy.
Yes.
He's all right, mate. I'm like, Dad, I'm your son. You call me son. And, you know, I could see him a bit taken aback by it, but he then called me son. He doesn't call me mate now. But like,
good for you.
But it really bothered me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. I didn't know why at the time, but obviously I've worked out now. It's because there is a hierarchy here. I will always be his son. He will always be my father.
Exactly.
And there are moral intonations attached to these labels that imply a specific relationship.
Exactly.
And what mate does is it equalizes everything. It reduces everything down to as if we're not father and son. And I'm sorry, I'm not having it. I didn't realize at the time.
Exactly.
But you're absolutely right. These social hierarchies are very important and important for the kids as well.
That's right. And we've all lost that.
I agree.
And that's nothing to do with immigration.
No, I agree. Immigration is a symptom of the decline, not the cause of the decline.
Exactly.
And this is what I've been trying to say this to people on the online right, where it's like, look, what would you have you do in this situation? You know, you can say, oh, I've got a fancy wish list of deporting everyone tomorrow. So, okay.
Well, they're just wasting their time.
Exactly. TikTok. Exactly.
Like, it's just silly. But it's a silly conversation. We need to be grown-ups about this.
Yeah.
And what we all ought to be thinking about, whether you're an ethno-nat or a leftist, what we all ought to be thinking about is, what is the positive vision for the country? How do we make it so that we can get along? Yes, we can have the conversation about mass migration and what's happened recently and what we do with illegal migrants. And so I understand that. Put that aside. How do we get on? Because it's simply not the case that it's reasonable for people who have been living here for 50 odd years to then say, oh, we're putting you on a helicopter to where? It's just not a reasonable thing to do.
But let's
and see. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, it doesn't matter whether it's reasonable or not. Is it politically actionable?
Yes.
And I don't see it on the table from any of the parties at the moment who are about to form a government.
Right.
So, okay, you know, fancy wish list off the table.
Indeed.
We need a settlement for now.
Exactly.
You know, what kind of settlement do you want? And I'm of the opinion that the light touch from the ideological state apparatuses has allowed us to see, like, machete fights in the streets of Birmingham. I think it's the reason for the rise of knife crime. I think it's the reason for all of the drugs and the, like, sexual assaults and all of these other terrible things. And I think it's because of a system that is generally permissive, mostly to immigrants, but also to the white kids.
It's permissive to everybody, but I would agree with you on the two-tier justice stuff is when it comes to hate crime and all of that stuff.
It's not just that.
Everyone is allowed to just behave in any which way they want. I mean,
it is, but I do detect it to be worse towards the immigrant communities because this lack of authority, it's very clear to me that the white authorities don't feel like they have the authority to police the immigrant communities.
Yes, it depends on what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I think when it comes to sort of murder, then that's different. But when you're talking about expressing one's views, political views, or what comes to protesting or comes to demonstrating one's religion in the street, for instance, then there is a two-tier system going on.
But it's not just that. I mean, I recall during the Southport riots, there was a video of a police officer who had failed to engage properly with the Muslim community. And he turned around to these white protesters and said, look, you know, we can't do anything about them, lads. And he was speaking in the collective we, so he is with the white people, but they aren't policed by the same police officer.
Yes.
And, you know, there was another incident where they asked them to put the weapons in the mosques, for example. It's like, sorry, you're the police.
Yes.
They're armed.
Yes.
Disarm them. That's your job. But there's clearly a lack of moral authority. And this is, you saw this in the complaint about the Israeli football fans coming over.
Yes, no, no, where, no, but those are just, all, I agree with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, but I think this, but that, this pervades different. All of society, really.
No, but for instance, if someone was murdered, you know.
Yeah, I'm not saying they wouldn't on
a
murder.
You know, if it's a white guy who's been murdered or a black guy who's been murdered, the detective who comes out is investigating that murder with the same fervor as he would either in either well, situation. You're talking about politically so. Charged situations that have to do with race or religion, which I agree with on what you're saying.
The grooming gangs, for example. You yes. know, there's definitely a reluctance to investigate that, and that's a pretty heinous crime.
Yes, yes.
Know? Like, so there's a lack of moral authority that the white authorities have over the ethnic minority communities, which I'm not saying is your fault or anything like that.
But yes.
It's definitely a feature of the country at the moment, and it's like, right, okay, that needs to be solved, you know?
Yes. And I agree entirely. Of course. About the grooming gangs, what you're saying, that,
I know.
Well, what's even worse, not only that it happened, but what has happened since?
Yeah, it's mad.
You know, it's not all we talk about, and it's not yeah. people are not outraged, and our politicians just want to push it under the ground. I mean, it's just awful.
I wasn't trying to put you on the spot on that in particular,
but it's a good point.
But
I take it.
Thank you. but this is the issue, and the reason that they feel this way is because I think fundamentally that would feel to them like an inequality. They would feel like the white man imposing what we perceive, I mean us too, perceive to be the correct ordering of the world on a minority community that doesn't necessarily agree, but frankly shouldn't be given the option, right?
Well, it's the fear of being called racist.
Yes.
White people are so terrified about being called racist that they'll do anything to avoid being called that word.
But the problem that they have is it kind of is racism.
Yes, that they are racist.
No.
They are being racist because they're unable to hold ethnic minorities to the same standard as they would do white people.
But also, the standard comes from the white English. So,
meaning what? Go on.
So it is a standard that belongs to a race. And if you're implying, if you're, you know, let's say you've got, you know, a very traditional Pakistani Muslim community, the standard is not theirs. Like, they don't have the same standards for anything, actually. You know, they've got a completely different culture, and if they've set up essentially a kind of ethnic enclave in this area, that's got a racial dimension to it. And so
I mean, I'm sure some of them that's the case. You wouldn't say that's the case for all Pakistani heritage people.
What would I say?
Well, I don't know. I think I have two Pakistani heritage friends who well, I just like any of my white friends, really, in terms of the way they behave and think and so on. I mean, obviously, they were brought up here.
Exactly.
They were born here.
But that's the point about integration, right? So
yes.
they may not even speak Urdu or whatever language that they speak in Pakistan. But you've got areas of the country where that's not the case, right? There's no integration. And these people are very... And so it's taken on the aspect of an enclave. So everyone in there is essentially a kind of colonist from Pakistan. I mean, this is why you had these MPs in Birmingham saying, we need to build an airport in Mirpur. And it's like, who possibly thinks that that would be necessary?
Why is that our problem?
Exactly, right? But then, so for us to say, right, we've got these English standards, we've got this English discipline, we've got this order of the universe that was developed by the English in England, and we would like to impose it upon you, that kind of is a form of racism, right? That's us, the English, saying you have to do these things our way. And so the left kind of have a point that that's racist.
I don't think that's racist. I do my school the way I do. It's our ethos. If you want to come to my school, then you need to follow our ethos.
I know.
If you want to live in Britain, then you need to follow the British rules and ethos and culture and so on. That seems pretty straightforward to me.
I completely agree with you, but those things didn't spring out of the earth fully formed. They're the product of a people and a continuum over time.
Yes.
And that's what the left are getting at. And that's one of the things that on the conservative side, we don't really understand, that when we say things like, because I agree with everything you're saying here, obviously, but when we say that, it's actually not unreasonable for the people on the other side of the argument that we're saying it to say, oh, right, so you've got this kind of ethnic particularity and chauvinism in the very nature of the thing that you're trying to impose. And until we can be brave enough to say, well, if you think that's racist, fine, but we're still going to do it this way either way, because this is how it's done here.
So it's true that the left attacked me, for instance, for having not allowed prayer at Michaela. And they have this sense of you've got to give every ethnic minority everything they want. Yeah. Whatever they want, you've got to give it to them. And I mean, I have to say, it's not just to do with prayer. It has to do with neurodiverse pupils or it has to do with LGBTQ whatever. Pupils or whatever it is. You've just got to hand over. There's no sense of, no, we need order. We need to know who we are. And
but you're not setting up a madrasa and imposing Quranic law, right?
No. So...
So you're but that would be an Arabic interpretation of what order looks like.
Yes.
You're taking an English interpretation.
Yes.
So one of the things I think that is difficult for us to properly accept is that there is a temporalized nature to the order that we're creating. Right? It's not just a random universal thing that everyone adheres to. Actually, it's ours, it's particular to us. And we are going to impose it. You know, they are going to call us racist and we have to just be like, we don't care what you think.
Well, and I don't see why it's so controversial. This is England.
Well, I agree.
I mean, why wouldn't it be English?
It shouldn't be controversial at all.
And the thing, what I should say as well, is that there are lots of ethnic minorities who would agree with you.
I know.
You know, they look, you know, when you come to England, you know, it's funny because my own father, my parents live in Canada, and my own father, when I showed him a video of our school, he said, but where is this? And I said, it's in London. He said, but how is this London? You know, because he hasn't been to London for many years. And because he was looking at the children. And he said, there must have been a lot of immigration. He was so shocked because he remembers London from the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. So he was just like, he just couldn't understand. You know, the fact is that even ethnic minorities would like England to be English.
I know.
And the fact is that England can only be English with a small number of immigrants. That's the thing. And you can have some immigrants, but if you have too many immigrants, then it changes the nature of the country.
Correct.
And what the identitarian leftists don't really understand, the multiculturalists, and I have to say, I would tend to say that we are a multicultural school, and I know that probably brings you out in hives, but the thing is that I'd say it's a patriotic multiculturalism.
I don't know if I'd describe you as cool as multicultural, because you're literally rejecting all the tenets of multiculturalism.
Well, not all of them. So what I mean is,
okay,
the Muslim girls wear their hijabs, the Sikh children wear their bangles.
Well, maybe you are a multicultural school.
So it's not, you know, we're not hard assimilationists. We are allowing a certain, because where the conversation needs to be had is, are we really saying as a country we want to raise all the mosques and the temples to the ground, or are we saying people are allowed their different religions, but there is because what we say is, of course you're allowed your own religions and so on, you're just not practicing them in the school. And of course you're allowed to eat whatever it is you want to eat at home, the different foods that you eat, but you're going to eat the food that we eat at school, and we have a family lunch where everyone serves each other from the same pot of food, and it's like a family dinner. So we have an ethos and we have a way of doing things. So yes, there is an overall culture that everyone participates in. And that's why I would call it a patriotic multiculturalism, where the patriotism comes before the multiculture, but that there are different cultures that are there, obviously, because they go off. Some of them go off to mosques, some of them go off to temples, some of them go off to church, and that's fine and that's good and so on. But that their allegiance when they're in the school is to the school and to the ethos of the school. And the problem that, you know, I always say, where is your heart? You know, home is where the heart is. And if your heart is with Britain, then your home is with Britain, right? If your heart is not with Britain, then maybe that's not your home.
Agreed.
And that's where I think the conversation sort of needs to start. So it's not, I don't necessarily think, because there are different things. What makes you English? I do think that look, in 1985, all of us brown and black people understood that English meant white English. Everybody knew we were British, you know, English, white English people were English. Like, and nobody had a problem with that. I don't understand why it's suddenly become a problem now. It was all understood that we were British. And then that Fraser Nelson and Constantine Kisson discussion came out. And the thing is, I understand why Fraser was saying that, because he was thinking, well, I'm Scottish, but my children are different from me because they were brought up in England. So they have English cultural, an English culture to them that he does not have. So I'd say, yes, there's being ethnically English, but there's something else. Like, where I get worried about the ethnonationalists, so they're saying all that matters is your ethnicity. That is not all that matters. Obviously, there is the culture of England. There is the Rolling Hills and the Wordsworth and the Shakespeare and the pubs and the pints and the baked beans and so on. There is something to what it is to be English. And then there is also the ties that you will have to people in England, you know? And if you have no ties to people who are in England and you don't speak English, you don't mix with English people, you don't know anything about her history and her culture and her and what it is to be English, then it is a bit odd to be arguing, well, I'm British at all, because, well, you're living in England, but you're just a bit of a passenger. You're sat here for the moment until you get up and go somewhere else. And that's a bit odd.
I think passenger is a good way of describing it as well. But I think you're exactly right on this. I think the real problem is demographic insecurity. And just I guess we're probably running out of time. So
yes.
Finish on the point that you raised. There has to be a limit to the amount of immigration, because at the moment, it seems like England is probably about 70% English, which is obviously unprecedented and has not been uniformly spread across the country. So you have areas which are highly diverse with zero English people.
Yes.
And this is something that I think a lot of the sort of ethno-nationalist types are correct to be very, very concerned about. Right. This is not.
I get it.
This is not something that we can carry on forever. But it's not your fault. So I don't know why they're going on as if it's your fault.
Yes.
And honestly, I do think that you're doing the best that you can in the circumstances. But from a political perspective, yeah, okay. We need to talk about that. You know, obviously, we need to get political parties that will actually end immigration and things like this. Okay, fine. But there's no point going after a headmistress of the most conservative school in the country.
The one school with the Union flag flying outside where we sing God Save the King. I mean, that's the thing, where we teach chronological British history properly, where the children really know what it is to be British. You know, that's the thing. You're attacking the one school that's doing this properly and who's trying to spread the word about it. And people come, teachers come and see that and think, my goodness, look at how this works. And
every school in England used to be like this.
Yes.
And my dad, my mum went to schools exactly like this.
Yes.
Highly strict. You know, you've got the, and you can read it in any kind of description from like the 1930s or 40s or something like this, of just normal English life. In every village, every school is like this.
Yes.
And so to be shocked that you're doing this, and from the English nationalist perspective, is like, no, the shock is that we're not doing this everywhere else.
That's right. And we've done it at great cost.
Yes.
You know, we've had to fight tooth and nail to be able to survive. First of all, to set up. The leftists came for us in every possible way to try and stop it. It's amazing that we managed to get off the ground. And then to have survived this long. I mean, it has been a real fight. So, and why? Because I believe that schools should be disciplined spaces with traditional teaching, traditional values that are small C conservative, that embrace that traditional Christianity. They're not Christian, we are secular, but that those Christian values very much exist in our school and should exist in our country. And unfortunately, we don't have the backbone to stand up for any of this anymore. So no wonder everyone's walking all over us, and that is the problem. And what we need to do is understand who we are, believe who we are, and then stop squabbling all over all of this stuff about we're just being distracted by the immigration conversation, which I understand does need talking about. But if that's all we're talking about, we're missing what's actually going on under the carpet in our schools, in our culture every day, which means you could put all the immigrants on helicopters out of here. And I'm telling you, England would be in big trouble with the culture that we've currently got, where everyone hates each other and no one's able to talk to each other.
I guess we'll leave that.
All right. Thanks, Carl.
Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.